Vayichi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim 17 shana. Vayichi yemei Yaakov shnei chayav 7 shanim v'arba'im umas shana. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt for 17 years, and the days of Yaakov, the years of his life, were 147 years.
OU Israel presents
Come In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayichi, but it's taking place, meaning the recording of the show, on Asara B'Tevet, the fast day of Asara B'Tevet, and therefore the show will revolve around that, even though many of the listeners will be hearing it only after Asara B'Tevet. And also because last week we spoke about it as well. But it's very awkward. I'm in the middle of fasting. I don't have my usual glass of seltzer to soothe my throat, if that's what seltzer could do. And it'll be a difficult show. And what you have to do is put your minds into the framework of the mind frame, the mindset of Asara B'Tevet. So let's start again. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 10th day of the month of Tevet, 5775, corresponding to January 1st. I guess even though it is Asara B'Tevet, I would like to wish a happy anniversary to my cousins Alan and Sylvia, who got married right after the fast of Asara B'Tevet. I remember all the way long time ago, dressed in tuxedo, actually I think it was top hat and tails, as an usher, and bringing toothbrush and toothpaste to be able to take care of that after the fast was over. And the wedding was that night, and the joke in the family has always been that since they were fasting on the day of their wedding, why shouldn't everybody else? Anyway, happy anniversary. They'll be here soon to help celebrate the marriage of their niece, my other cousin Michael and Rose's daughter Yaffa, and B'Shah Tova. And we'll talk about that when it gets closer. So Mazel Tov to the whole family. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi'ya'amod. Ki imcha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbeimo fedut. V'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela la'ora u'mishibud la'geula Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. The song that you heard as the intro to the show is Shifchi Kamayim. Shifchi Kamayim Libech. It's a pasuk, a verse in the book of Echa, the book of Lamentations, which is read on Tisha B'Av. And it says, pour out your heart before God. Shifchi kamayim libech, nochach penei Hashem, before the face of God. It is a hauntingly beautiful song, I think, one of my all-time favorites, and I find it difficult to listen to at any other times of the year except for the three-week period from Shivasar B'Tammuz and to Tisha B'Av, as well as the fast of Asara B'Tevet and Tzom Gedalia, which are linked to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Apropos that, let's give a little primer for those who need it, or primer. I think primer is correct. Primer is a coat of paint that you put down before the color. In any event, it goes like this. The Navi, the prophets, speak of four fast days. They are identified by the months in which they fall. So there is Tzom Rivi'i, the fast of the fourth month, Shivasar B'Tammuz, Tzom Chamishi, the fast of the fifth month, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Shivi'i, the fast of the seventh month, which is Tzom Gedalia, and even though Yom Kippur is also in the seventh month, that's in a category all by itself, being a Torah fast day. These are four from the prophets. And Tzom Asiri, the fast of the tenth month, which happens also to be the tenth day of the tenth month, namely today, Asara B'Tevet. Asara B'Tevet primarily commemorates the beginning of the siege around Jerusalem in the time of the Babylonians, prior to the destruction of the first temple, which lasted, the siege, about 2.5 years, until the city of Jerusalem was breached on the 9th of Tammuz, and the Beit HaMikdash destroyed a month later on the 9th of Av. Tzom Gedalia represents in the language of the Rambam, the extinguishing of the glowing ember that remained alive after the destruction when Gedalia appointed as a self-governor, as an autonomous governor of, was assassinated by his cousins, and that led to tremendous amount of murder, bloodshed, and exile of the remnant that was still around even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So if the Beit HaMikdash's burning is pictured as a full-rage fire, and the glowing embers, what's left after the fire died down, this was the extinguishing of that ember and completed the destruction process. So these four fast days are for that purpose, Churban Beit HaMikdash. And there is a prophecy in the book of Zechariah, that says that in the future, at the time of the Geula, these four fast days will become Yamim Tovim, good days, festive days, Lebeit Yehuda, to the house of Judah, meaning to the Jewish people. And we are still awaiting that, hopefully doing our own Hishtadlus towards that. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. Asara B'Tevet had two other dates next to it that had events that were lumped into the 10th of Tevet. The dates are the 8th and the 9th of Tevet. I think we spoke about this last week. The 9th of Tevet marks the time that the Torah was translated for the first time into Greek. And the 9th is the anniversary of the deaths of Ezra and Nehemiah. And I'll refer to those two dates, actually the events that they mark, in context with the concept of Asara B'Tevet, Also know that in much more recent times, since the early years of the State of Israel, Asara B'Tevet also adopted the commemoration of the Holocaust. Now, technically, we've got three different dates in the year that touch the Holocaust. One is Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, on the 27th of Nisan. Talk about that a different time. And Tisha B'Av in the summer, and Asara B'Tevet in the winter, sort of adopted as an anniversary of the deaths of countless Jews, especially those whose dates of death are not known. And specifically, Asara B'Tevet today has been designated as Yom Kaddish Klali, a general Kaddish day to be said for those people for whom no one is saying Kaddish. You have a lot of people in the Shoah who perished, whose survivors raised families and next generation and next generation, and there is a reminder within those kind of families of uncle so-and-so, great uncle so-and-so, my grandfather, this, that, whatever, who died in the Shoah, and those memories are perpetuated plus or minus, depending on how parents talk and grandparents talk. And of those, some of the dates of death are known, and those yahrzeits are observed and marked, and some are not known. And Asara B'Tevet sort of became the day to say Kaddish for a lost ancestor, relative, whose date of death was not known. In addition, there are many, many, many sad, many, many, many victims of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, who do not have families to continue their memories, and we think of them as well. And you have many, many more whose names are not even known. And certainly their yahrzeit is not marked, and therefore Yom Asara B'Tevet became a day to say Kaddish for them. And really, anybody who says Kaddish, I'm excluding people with their both parents alive, or generally it's a sensitive issue whether they can say Kaddish, mourners Kaddish, but anyone else who's already experienced Kaddish, I think should be saying Kaddish today for Yom Kaddish Klali, Asara B'Tevet. Now, I'm going to try to encapsulate an idea. I started expressing it last week. I expressed it on Shabbat when I gave a shiur someplace else, and earlier this week, and I wrote about it, and I still am not happy with the way it's come out. The lead tidbit in the hard copy and the internet version is called Ten Tevet En Vayechi, which we'll get to also, a reality check. And I tried to say it, but I have limitations there, which I don't have. I mean, I do have limitations on the radio also, but not as much. And here's the idea that I wanted to work on. There's one thing to commemorate, to mark, to mourn, and to fast for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And it's done on these four fast days that I mentioned, for four key landmarks on the process of destruction. But there needs to be more, a lot more. And that is serious introspection and resolution, and pardon me for using that term on the particular date in the secular calendar that we are today, because we mean it in a much more serious way. A resolution to do something that will break the cycle of these fast days and finally convert them into the realization of Zechariah's prophecy into festive days. Now, that doesn't get done with a snap of the finger. Otherwise, we would have done it a long time ago. What it means is, which adds to the mournful nature of the days, it means thinking of those things that brought about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, and many tragedies and calamities that have plagued Jewish people throughout their history, including in some way the Shoah. And even though we cannot figure out what brought it on and why it was happening and why it was allowed by God to happen, if you want to put it that way, so I know that I'm very sensitive ground here, but the concept of mourning Churban, mourning the destruction, has to go along with saying, how do we, or what can we do to get out of not only the cycle of the fast days, but on the causes of destruction. Now, we could say in broad terms, a lack of faithfulness to God, a lack of proper behavior among our people, person to person, and perhaps, not perhaps, and a lousy attitude towards the land of Israel. And that, I think, pretty much covers it all. You take any aspect of Jewish life, and it's covered by Torah, by Eretz Yisrael, by interpersonal relationships. Again, in painting these broad strokes, the eighth of Tevet, which represents the not only the translation of the Torah into Greek, but the basically the severing of the written word from the oral law, which leads to gross misunderstanding and misinterpretation and perversion of things that are very important in the Torah. And the ninth of Ezra and Nehemiah brings to mind their attempt at bringing back the exile after only 70 years of exile, when 80% of the Jews in Babylonia did not come. And that's something that is mirrored by statistics of Aliyah. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but find out how many American Jews, USA and Canada, let's say, have come on Aliyah in the last X number of years, and how many still remain outside of Israel. It sadly parallels the success or lack thereof of the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. So their deaths, the anniversary of their deaths, which are associated with the ninth of Tevet, brings to mind that other aspect of Jewish life and existence, meaning the land of Israel. I tend to speak about this a lot, so I won't belabor the point now, but you've got Jews who are committed sincerely to observance of Torah and mitzvot, who somehow seem to draw a line between all the other mitzvot that you could do in anywhere else in the world and Eretz Yisrael and its mitzvot. And it's a line that should never be drawn. A person should say, I wish I could keep Shabbos. Or he keeps Shabbos. He should say, I know as a Jew I should keep kosher, but I don't. Or he should keep kosher. That's the goal. Well, a Jew should also say, I wish I could live in Eretz Yisrael, where a Jew belongs, and come. So I won't go into that. The other side of the coin are the Jews who may be committed to living in Israel, but are not too committed to the rest of the Torah and mitzvot. And I'm lumping everybody together here, which is not good. But I just told someone a story yesterday of an experience I had back in the Army where 5 o'clock in the morning in basic training, the first morning we were there, we're all lined up, we get instructions for the day, and the mefaked, the commander, says to us, Datiim, religious Jews, to Beit Knesset, go to the shul to daven shacharit, Chilonim, secular Jews, come with me. During the day, one of the guys in my unit came up to me, because I was the oldest of the bunch, one of the non-religious fellows, and he said to me, he called me a Chiloni. He said that I was secular. I'm not. I might not be that religious, but I don't feel myself as a secular Jew. So I whispered something to the mefaked later, and the next morning he corrected it. He announced at 5 o'clock, after we were dismissed in the morning, people who go to shul to daven, go there. Those who don't go to shul to daven, come with me. And that broke down a certain barrier. My point is that there might be many non-religious Jews in Israel, but it's very hard to find one that's not connected in some significant way to his Judaism. So therefore, there are religious Jews and not yet religious Jews, or people who need to be awakened to it, but anyway, that's a different issue. Now you add to this something that comes not from the 8th of Tevet or the 9th of Tevet or the 10th, but comes from this week's Parsha of Vayechi. Vayechi is the culmination of that which started in Vayeshev, Miketz, and Vayigash into Vayechi, and that is the episode of Yosef and his brothers. Clearly, we're dealing with the problems on an interpersonal relationship, and that becomes something to explore to make the picture complete of our agenda for an Asara B'Tevet and really for all Jewish life. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayechi. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayechi, but also for Asara B'Tevet. And the fact that you might be listening after Asara B'Tevet does not change the fact that there are very significant elements of this that go all year round. Just as a side point, I have a sefer called Avelut HaChurban, Mourning the Destruction. Yes, it has a lot on the fast days, but it also has a lot on things that are every day of the year. So if Asar B'Tevet, Shivasar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, and Tzom Gedalia are four fast days that commemorate the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, so is the fact that when I leave my home and I am about to go to the outside door, I look to the right and there is a large, conspicuous square on the wall which is unplastered and unfinished and unpainted, and it happens to have a crude calligraphy of mine of Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, etc., hanging there. And many, many homes you see such a thing, which is, I don't know why everyone doesn't have it, it's definitely something, but it belongs to Avilut HaChurban all year round. And there are other things as well. And therefore, I'm not... I don't have a problem with the fact that you might be listening to this after Asara B'Tevet. So I was talking about the effect of the story of Yosef and his brothers. That is a sad model that perpetuates itself throughout Jewish history. If the story were such that Yosef was 17 years old, this is back in Vayeshev, and his father gave him a special multicolored striped coat, and his brothers were jealous, and he had some dreams, and he told his brothers about the dreams, and they hated him even more, and then he told them about another dream, and they hated him more, and then they said, let's get rid of him, then we'll see what happens with his dreams, and first they wanted to kill him, and then they wanted to throw him into a pit, and then they took him out of the pit and sold him into slavery. Get the point? That's the story. If it goes all the way through and into Parshat Vayechi, that Yaakov has now been in Egypt for the last 17 years, that he has had a little bit of peace and tranquility with his family, albeit outside of Israel, and Yosef has taken good care of him, and Yaakov dies, and there's a huge funeral, bringing his body back to Canaan, to Ma'orat HaMachpelah, and not only the descendants go, but a lot of Egyptians go also, and it's a big thing. Yaakov was revered there. And then the brothers realize their father is gone, and maybe Yosef will strike out at them, and he assures them that this was God's plan, and he holds nothing against them, and continues to support them in style, and succeeds in raising, even though he died earlier than his brothers, he dies having, and the Torah makes a point of saying, having raised on his knees not just sons, but grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And that's very nice. If, in some way, Parshat Vayechi were to finish with the equivalent of, and they lived happily ever after, then we would say that's a story from a long time ago, and we learn whatever we learn from it, and we don't necessarily have to make connections to our own time. But it's not happily ever after, far from it. The first thing is, you open to the next Sedra, the book of Shemot, the Parsha of Shemot, and the people have grown to a huge multitude. The beginning of the Parsha purposely repeats certain things that have already been said in the end of the book of Bereshit about the proliferation of the Jewish people, but they are enslaved, and the slavery gets even more bitter and bitter, and then the story continues from there. If when we came out of Egypt, after 210 years from the time that Yaakov went down, if we could say, and they lived happily ever after, that would be something else. But it doesn't happen. We have good times, and we have less good times and bad times, but we have not yet reached, and they lived, and we lived happily ever after. Now, you have something else, though. It's not just the big picture of bad times, but specifically the enmity among brothers, which did not end. You could say, if everybody got along with everybody else, and they were enslaved, so the slavery would be the problem, but not the relationship among the people. But you have, right after Moshe's birth and being fished out of the Nile by the daughter of Paro, he goes out to see what his brothers are doing. He kills an Egyptian. But the next day, already you see the infighting between two descendants of Reuven and Moshe, who descends from Levi. And there's bad blood there. And it continues and continues and continues. The split of the kingdoms, which is the theme of last week's Haftarah, continues. You have the Haftarah of Vayechi, which deals with the succession of the throne from David, who is dying, to his son Shlomo, but not everybody liked that idea, and there were rebellions, and finally, when everything settled down for David and for Solomon, it just continued to get worse after that, when you have the split of the kingdoms and battles between them. And this continues and continues. And it comes to our own present day, where we have too many splits within the Jewish people. Be it Ashkenazi and Sephardi, be it Haredi and Tzioni, be it Hasidim and Misnagdim, even between Hasidim, even within one Hasidic sect, And these squabbles can be seen as a derivative or an extension of the original problem between Yosef and his brothers. So yes, when you study the Chumash and you do in-depth into these parshiot, you'll analyze the causes and effects of the particular enmity between the brothers and Yosef. But using it again, painting broad strokes, we're talking about a chronic situation in Judaism, among the Jewish people, of problems from brother to brother. A bright spot in that, by the way, was Ephraim and Manasseh. Without going into all the details, the commentaries say that Ephraim and Manasseh did not display the rivalry that had plagued us since creation. What do you call Cain and Abel, Cain and Hevel, and then Avraham with Yitzchak and Yishmael, and Yitzchak with Yaakov and Esav, and Yaakov with Yosef and his brothers. And Ephraim and Manasseh are the exception to the rule, let's say, which might be why, according to Parshat Vayechi, and we follow this, we bless our sons and grandsons. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. We don't say like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We say like Ephraim and Manasseh, because there was a specific quality to their relationship, apparently, that became an ideal. We'll talk more, but I want you to listen to Dudi Kalish and his version of Shifchi Kamayim. You'll hear the words this time, not just instrumental, and then we'll talk more. Shifchi Kamayim Kamavayim Libech Noichach Benev Meyashem Shifchi Kamayim Kamavayim Libech Noichach Benev Meyashem Shifchi kamayim kamah vavayim libech Noichach benev v'yashem Ayayoy shifchi kamayim kamayim libech Noichach benev v'yashem Ya ya shifchi kamayim libech Noichach b'nei Yashem Shifchi kamayim kamayim libech Noichach b'nei Yashem Ya ya shifchi kamayim libech Noichach b'nei Yashem Shifchi kamayim kamayim libech Noichach b'nei Yashem Shifchi kamayim kamavayim libech Noichach benev v'yashem Ayayay shifchi kamayim kamayim libech Noichach benev v'yashem Okay, I'm going to try to snap out of Asara B'Tevet, even though I'm still in it. We have Mincha here at the center. We had it already at 1:20, and we have it coming up in less than a half an hour again at 4 o'clock. You don't have to daven Mincha twice on the day, but on every fast day we have a slow-paced later minyan, closer to evening. Sunset is kind of early this time of year, so 4 o'clock is like Ne'ilah time. And what I say to the people there, to keep in mind the fact that the mincha on a fast day has the emotional power of Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur. There's actually a little proof of that based on the various customs about when the Kohanim give their blessings on fast days, but I won't go into that now. And just say that it's an emotional time. At the center we have a shir, which is taking place now, by Rabbi Ephraim Sprecher. Then we'll have mincha. Then a mini shir that I give, which will probably echo some of the things that I'm sharing with the listeners now. Followed by arvit, myriv, and then fast-breaking refreshments. So, the best thing to snap out of this is the 11th of Tevet, which begins this evening after 5 o'clock or so, is the 9th birthday of grandson Shoham. And I remember the year that he was born. He was born, the time of day was right after sunset, according to the calculations based on sea level, and 5 minutes later, the sunset based on taking into account the elevation of Yerushalayim. And I had to ask Ashila on behalf of my son-in-law and daughter about the Brit, because if it was even 2 minutes after sunset, it would have been bumped to the following Thursday. It was a Wednesday then. And if it were still considered to be even 2 minutes before sunset, then the Brit was on Wednesday, which it was, because the psak I got from the head of the Moetzat Datit of Yerushalayim is that in Yerushalayim the minhag is to calculate sunset taking into account Jerusalem's elevation of approximately 800 meters. That's about 2,500 feet. In any event, very happy birthday to Shoham, and all the best. Vayechi is a relatively short parsha, 85 psukim, the smallest in the book of Bereshit, and quite small on the scale of things. I think it's number 45 in the all-time Sedra list. Let's check. 44 in number of psukim. And it's 45 in the number of lines it takes up in a Torah scroll. But 44th out of 54 means there are only 10 sedras that are shorter than it, and 43 that are longer. As such, as I mentioned, it starts very unusual, not at a break between two sections of the Torah, but perfectly continuous with the end of Vayigash. And there are all kind of interpretations as to why, some of them mystical. Be that as it may, it starts by mentioning that Yaakov had lived in Egypt, as I mentioned earlier in the show, for 17 years. This is an obvious point to make, that the first 17 years had a different way of life when he, Yosef was 17 years old when his problems began. So from the birth of Yosef, for 17 years, Yaakov had it relatively tranquil. Then he had very, very hard years. And then after his reunion with Yosef, I am Yosef, is my father still alive, etc., he lives another 17 years. So there is that comment that is made. He was getting close to death, and he called for his son Yosef, and he asks Yosef to swear that he will not bury him, Yaakov, in Egypt, but rather bring him back to Canaan into the Me'orat HaMachpelah. Commentaries ask, why did he ask Yosef to swear? Didn't he trust him? So they give two different kind of answers. One is that Yosef was not the boss. He was second in command. And Paro, who would have to give permission, could have said no. But if Yosef were to tell him, I swore to my father that I would do this, Paro was not ready, according to our sources, to say, who cares about what you swore? I say no. He would never do that. Because Yosef had taken an oath to Paro not to reveal certain things about him. And make me break my promise, I'll break the promise I made you. So Paro keeps the deal. The other reason that's given for his swearing is that Yosef probably never got over the fact that his mother died, Rachel, at such a young age in childbirth with Binyamin, and was not buried where Avraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov will eventually be buried, and Leah. So it's understandable if he would not want to fulfill his father's request. Yaakov makes him swear, and of course that means he will do it. Then comes the episode of the blessing of Yosef by Yaakov via Yosef's sons. You could say that the best blessing a person can receive from his father is through him to his sons, indicating a three-generation unit which will perpetuate, hopefully, throughout all the generations. And you have the famous episode of Sikel et Yadav. Yosef is careful to present the older one towards Yaakov's right hand and the younger one towards his left hand, and Yaakov switches his hands. Yosef panics because he sees jealousy flaring up again between brothers, to repeat in another generation what he had gone through. And Yaakov says, even though he was blind and did not see, so Yosef thought that maybe he made a mistake, Yaakov said, I know what I'm doing it on purpose, and this is the way it should be. And that perhaps is also why we use Ephraim and Manasseh in our blessing towards for our own children, sons and grandsons. Then you have the famous verse which is said each night when a person goes to sleep, Hamalach HaGoel Oti Mikol Ra, the angel who you, God, sent to protect me from all evil. You should also, God, please bless the children and call them in my name, in the name of my fathers, and father and grandfather, v'yidgula rov b'kerev ha'aretz, and they should be prolific in the world. We are just about out of time for this show, so I will just wish you a meaningful fast if you are still fasting, which is not likely, but maybe. And if not, I hope it was meaningful, and I hope these words added to it retroactively. And Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameach.